All right. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Bullpen Blues. As always, I'm your co-host, Kevin Dixon, joined by our good buddy, David Esser. David, a lot has certainly changed in the past few months since we last recorded.
Kevin, a lot has changed, and it has been probably about 2 months since we jumped on the old airwaves. I'd say
like mid-June.
Yeah. A lot has changed, Kevin. I don't think anyone needs us to tell them, but our Philadelphia Phillies are going to the World Series.
NL champs, dude. I mean, just think of all the times that I came on and sat in this chair and spoke into the microphone of just get in, stay in it, stay in the race. You never know what can happen. Stay in it. And look where we're at now.
Yeah. And before we jump into how we got here, why we got here, and all the changes that took place in this organization, I want to give a big shout out to everyone who's been listening since day one.
Yes.
Kevin, we started this podcast in 2019. Is that right?
Yeah.
Or was it 2020?
No, it was right before COVID, so it was 19.
2019, yeah. Going into the 2020 season, where we had statistically the worst bullpen in the history of baseball, hence our name, the Bullpen Blues.
Yeah.
This podcast, this team has been through a lot the last couple of years, from the Jake Arriettas, the Andrew McCutcheons, the Freddie Galvises of the world coming back. Like, this team has been through a lot. Two different managers, Gabe Kapler to Joe Girardi, Matt Klentak, Andy McPhail, the list goes on and on. Kevin, it's been 11 years since the Phillies made the playoffs. They make the playoffs, they get in, they sneak in at the buzzer. And they make some serious noise. And I just think Phillies fans in general, but especially our listeners, like, y'all deserve this one. This is much, much needed, considering how just kind of depressing this team has been over the last decade. To get in, have this much energy, this much excitement, to look as good as they've looked, like, we truly do deserve this.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly have had time to reflect, like, the past, even like before they won the National League, like, said it to my dad numerous times over the past couple of weeks. It was just like, I can't believe this is happening. Like, it just escalated so fast. And I was lucky enough to go to game three against Atlanta. And like, you see the Hoskins homer and you see the Harper homer and you're just thinking like, man, like, now we have our own moments. And I said that to you yesterday, like, we don't have to live in the past anymore. Like, we have our own. Like, it's not, I'm not looking back to when I was 15 anymore, you know, looking, searching for, you know, why I'm a fan of the team. And like, you see those moments live and you think like, wow, like, I got to see that. Like, that's awesome. And then like the next day, Brandon Marsh hits a 3-run homer, which like overshadows what happened the day before. And then you get to San Diego and Schwarber hits a ball nearly 500 feet. And then game three, you know, Segura has the night of his life. And then game four, and like each night, it just kind of like has escalated further and further and further along to where now we're here. And I'll tell you what, David, like, we're not going to get too much into it tonight because we have other plans later this week where, you know, we will preview the World Series. But I think the Phillies have a good chance to win this series because they were able to line up their rotation, David, where they're going to have Nolan Wheeler pitch at least four of the 6 or 7 games, you know, however long this goes. But I couldn't agree with you more. Like, just so many people have reached out to me too in the last few weeks. Is like, I'm known as like the Phillies guy, especially like in my girlfriend's family and in my family as well. You know, not everyone is big time Phillies fans. So like seeing everybody kind of jump on board, you know, like, it has been awesome. And I'm not a gatekeeper fan, like, more the merrier, like, come on, hop on. But at the same time, like, it is sweet for people like me and you and, you know, a lot of our listeners who have been here since day one and have been with us since, you know, this team was at the bottom of the barrel. I mean, David, I remember back in 2015 when they lost 99 games, I watched every single night. Like, it didn't matter to me. Like, I just enjoyed, you know, baseball and I like the Phillies. So to kind of see where we're at now and to kind of look ahead, like, even beyond this season, like, if we looking into next season, that place is going to be electric next year too. Like, you know, everyone's kind of back on board and it kind of has shown like this is a baseball town, you know, like seriously, like like I said, like I was there game three against Atlanta. That atmosphere is something that I've never been a part of. Like, and I've been to Eagles games, I've been to Flyers games, Sixers games. I've never seen anything like that. So I couldn't agree with you more.
I mean, Kevin, I think the best way to put it is emotional what has happened in this city the last, you know, two, 3 weeks. Yeah. And I'm right there with you. I got old friends who are back in Philly that I'm texting. I'm texting my brother every day, my dad every day. We're all sharing highlights. I got people DMing me on Twitter telling me how they're going to games or, you know, how great of an experience it's been. Like, it's incredible. I'm right there with you. Like, this city, the way they rally around sports teams, but specifically baseball, it's incredible. You know, I grew up with the 07, the 08, that kind of team, and that was awesome. And I'm kind of seeing, like, just like you said, like wave two. Like, these are now, it's a whole new set of memories for not only us but everyone else in the Phillies fan base. And it's just, it's incredible. And it's one moment topping the other, just like you mentioned, culminating with probably the greatest home run in Phillies history up to this point with Bryce Harper, which we're going to talk about some Bryce Harper here in a second.
Yeah.
Kevin, I kind of want to circle this discussion back into a good point you made with the rotation. And I think how this team constructed their rotation is a big reason they're here in the first place. They believed all the way back in spring training that if they got in, which wasn't easy, but they did it, if they got in, that they had the horses at the top of the rotation to win games in October.
We've said it all along, Dave. Like, we've said it numerous times in previous episodes that, like, they'd be a tough out.
They would be a tough out. And up to this point, Kevin, no one's got them out. but Zach Wheeler, Aaron Nola, they didn't just rise to the occasion. They smashed through what I think most people thought was possible. They're arguably the best 1-2 punch in baseball, with how they perform in this postseason. And even Ranger Suarez, Noah Syndergaard, these guys stepping up. You look at that rotation, but specifically the guys at the top, like, they have been able to match up well with anybody and everybody. And I think it's a big, big reason prioritizing starting pitching, but not just starting pitching, but those horses, right? We're not talking about the guys who go 5 innings. The Jacob deGroms of the world. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about your old school pitchers. They're going to give you 90 to 100 pitches. They're going to keep the game close. They're going to shut down the opposition. They're going to get the Juan Sotos and the Manny Machados of the world out. And that's exactly what they did. They did all postseason long. And I think you can start right with those two at the top as a big reason why they've been able to do what they've done.
Yeah, and it's very I saw a great comparison. And now, like you mentioned 07, 08, like I'm 27. So I even remember a little bit further back. And now this is going really far back. I don't necessarily remember this, but back in 01, the Diamondbacks had Schilling and Randy Johnson. And that's kind of how they won the World Series, is they just leaned on those two guys and like just hope for the best the other days. And that's kind of how the Phillies have gotten here. And you mentioned Nola. And you can go down the list, David. You got Nola, even, I guess, Wheeler, if you want to add him in as well. Syndergaard, Gene Segura. You can go down this roster, and it's just guys just completely rewriting the legacy that they've had here in Philadelphia. And it just like, and we've gone back and forth on Segura for weeks now. He's going to be remembered much differently than he would have if this team didn't get into the postseason. And you know,
Kevin, we've been going back and forth on Segura for years. He's shown up. He's been incredible.
And it's like he's going to be remembered differently. And let's be real, like this is probably his last year here. When we look back on his Phillies career, we're not going to think of, you know, the time he didn't run out of fly ball and, you know, Andrew McCutchen tore his ACL. And we're not going to think about the times where he, you know, perceived to be dogging it a bit. We're going to be thinking about his 2-run single in St. Louis that sparked that 6-run comeback. The diving stops he had against the Padres and the big 2-run single he had in game 3. And just the emotion that he's played with as well. Like you can tell that he wants to win. He's grown up. And it's not just Gene, Dave. You can go down. Like Aaron Nola's completely rewritten his September swoon, if you want to call it that. Like nobody, everyone said he couldn't be a big game pitcher. And yeah, he had a clunker in game 2. But at the same time, like he's primarily, you know, one of the main reasons that this team is here. And that game 2 clunker as well, David, like like you mentioned, like they had Manny Machado, they'd Juan Soto. Like the Padres, yeah, like we may have been going back and forth, like, yeah, the Phillies should beat this team, but like they still had guys as well. And like they're going to get theirs at some point. Like there's a reason why those guys are who they are. But yeah, like it's pretty cool that like my dad said it kind of reminded him of the 93 Phillies, where it was like, you know, obviously I wasn't even alive yet, but like you look back on that team and think of them fondly. And I think that's no matter what happens here in the World Series, that's how we're going to remember this season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, you look at the guy at the forefront of that conversation, it's Rhys Hoskins. this is a guy who, you know, myself and Kevin, we've been very critical of, and for what it's worth, for good reason.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to get out in front of it, David. Like, I'm still looking forward to when they move on from him, but I can't deny that he's been massive for them.
I think he's probably earned himself one more year in Philly. They'll pay him the arbitration go from there. But, yeah. You know, regardless, you know, this is a guy who's kind of been the face of the 2017 to 2021 Phillies. You know, he was a big reason Bryce Harper signed here. He was supposed to kind of be our homegrown superstar. And for as good as he's been at times, he's never approached that superstar level, right? Like there was the running joke on, I want to say, one of the older MLB The Show games, where they would talk about him as a future MVP candidate when they would announce his walk-up, and he never got there. Yeah. And I think part of that's not his fault, that the expectations for him were too high. Everyone wanted him to be the next Ryan Howard, and that's not who he is. But I think entering the playoffs, he was struggling big time in St. Louis, really struggling at the start of the Braves series. Had some terrible defensive mishaps. And you're looking at him like, all right, man, like you got here, we did all this work, and you're not, you know, you're not stepping up to the moment. This is what we expected. And then just like that, he completely flips the switch. Massive home run against Atlanta. Hits, what was it, four homers or five homers against San Diego. Just goes ballistic. And they're all big home runs too. You know, they're all big.
The one he had to tie the game the other night was crazy, dude.
Yeah, like, is a two home run game against San Diego in the playoffs at home, like, completely flips the switch. And you're right. So many guys have done this. Sir Anthony Dominguez, people thought he was retired.
He's, like, kind of, like, emerged on the scene now in baseball in general. Like, people know who he is. Like, that's kind of the cool part, too, is, like, these guys are kind of introducing themselves to the baseball world. Like, they're on the national stage now.
I mean, Kevin, Jose Alvarado was in AAA a couple months ago, and people are talking about him as the best left-handed reliever in baseball.
I think he might be.
Zach Eflin, we thought again. He's never pitching for this team again. Now he's a high-leverage arm. Kevin, David Robertson, he was pitching overseas. He was pitching overseas. He was pitching in the Olympics, and he's here taking down big innings for a team going to the World Series. So, I love it. I think it personifies Philadelphia, kind of this underdog mentality. They were underdogs every series they played up to this point. They still are underdogs playing going up against Houston. Just so many different guys. And we could spend 2 hours talking about every single dude on this team who ended up playing a role. Brandon Marsh, you know, people thought he was cooked.
My dude.
He was playing against the Angels. You know, Nick Castellanos, for as terrible as he was this year, stepping up with some big moments in the playoffs. You can just go down the list forever, and I think it's awesome. Kevin, I now kind of want to circle back to a guy who was not an underdog. The expectations were high from, and somehow he exceeded all those expectations. We're talking about Bryce Harper. Kevin, like, you were there. You saw how people rallied around him in the stadium. Like, what we're looking at probably the greatest Phillies postseason performance ever up to this point?
I think it's up there, David, in terms of like Major League Baseball history. Like, he already has the record for hits, extra base hits for the Phillies. This is kind of like, it goes back to what we were just saying, like guys like Segura rewriting their legacy. Harper's just adding to his. And let's face it, man, he's 30 years old. Like, this is his prime. This is why you give him $330 million over 13 years, which even John Middleton said it to Bryce Harper. I think we overpaid you, or underpaid you, excuse me. I think we underpaid you. And honestly, David, they did. Like, for all the people who look at the big round number of $330 million, like, yeah, it's a large number. But if you look at the average value, I think he's like 15th in baseball when it was signed, and I think it's like 24th now in terms of average annual value, like where he ranks on the leaderboard. And then you look at his production, David. Top three player in the sport. Right? Would you? Do you think that's crazy to say? I mean, I think it's. You could argue he's the best player in the sport.
I think you could argue best certainly this past season. If you want to put him in the, if you want to put him top three up there with Ohtani and Judge, like absolutely. I don't think you can put him any lower than third.
Yeah, and you know how I'm not a big Ohtani guy, so
yeah, neither am I.
Yeah, so I mean, and it's kind of like, as I'm saying, like he's adding to his legacy. I mean, I guess he is technically rewriting it as well, because the narrative for the longest time is this guy couldn't win. He leaves the Nationals in 2019, they win the World Series, and everyone points the finger at him. But when in reality, that team was loaded, David. Like they, like we said, like who saw Juan Soto coming and kind of just taking that, you know, taking over that spot from Bryce Harper? Like that just doesn't happen. And it, honestly, the Phillies this year kind of have some similarities to that 2019 Nationals team. But I could, like you said, I can go on and on. I mean, this is easily the best player right now in the sport that's at least still left. Obviously, Houston has some fantastic players on their roster. But I'll tell you what, there's no one else that I'd rather have on the Phillies. I'm sure Mike Trout's looking on like, damn, I probably shouldn't have signed this extension here in Los Angeles, because, you know, what's kind of transpired here over the last few weeks. Think of all the free agents that are looking at the Phillies now as like they're becoming a destination, and like they can see what the fan base is. And then you have a guy like this as your leader. I don't think this is a one-off type of thing with the Phillies, David. I think this is just the beginning of something, you know, another pretty great run in team history. And the guy that's leading the charge, you know, just so happens to be the league MVP.
So, Kevin, what you're saying is you wouldn't trade Bryce Harper for Juan Soto. That's what you're saying.
That was like, I get the hot take world of like sports media. Like, I get it. But at the same time, like, come on, dude.
Yeah. Bryce Harper's a lot better. Like, we saw that firsthand.
And David, that home run that he hit to essentially win that series, Nick Castellanos mentioned it like when they were interviewing him, just how cool and calm that Harper was. He was the calmest person in the ballpark. And he pointed back to when he was on the Cubs in 2019 and Harper hit the walk-off grand slam and he was just running around the bases full speed, going crazy. And he kind of pointed to how Harper's grown as a person. And he even said, he's like, if you just look at the person and not the ball on that play, like just the way his demeanor, like it was just surreal. And I gotta agree, like you can tell. Obviously, he says in the dugout to Bryson Stott after, I can't believe that just happened. Like, I can't believe I just did that. You could see it when he's between second and third base. Like, he slows his trot down a little bit, and he's kind of just soaking it in. Like, I can't believe that just happened.
An awesome moment. All-time Phillies moment up there with
– all-time baseball moment, man.
All-time baseball. Like, I mean, that is the
– that's 50 years?
Moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's – well, as of right now, that's the highlight of his career.
Absolutely.
And like to just, you know, someone who grew up playing baseball, like even hitting off the tee in the backyard as a little kid, like that's the moment you dream of.
That's what you dream about, right?
Like, literally, like for that to become a reality, it's just so cool.
Hit a home run at home to send your team to the World Series is incredible. Kevin, I kind of want to make two points on Bryce, with the first one being, you know, sometimes you see those posts on Twitter, Facebook, social media, where it's like, you know, Tom Brady had two separate Hall of Fame careers, right?
Mm-hmm.
His pre-30 and his post-30. I think we're seeing a similar thing with Bryce Harper.
Yeah.
I think you look at where he's at right now. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
I think there's a chance what he does between 30 and whenever he retires, 37, 38, it could be a second Hall of Fame career, because you just look at his swing, the way he's playing. It's at such a high level. I think he's got a lot of really good years left. I think that's just an incredible thing to think about, that he's probably just past the halfway point of his career, and he's got a lot of really good years left. Kevin, I think the second point, it's not particularly common for the big players in baseball to perform the way Bryce has been in the postseason.
Hitting over 400, like the entire time.
It's... It doesn't really happen. I think a lot of the times you look at teams that do well in the postseason, and it's always about kind of the unsung heroes, right? You talk about that 2019 Nats team. It was Howie Kendrick, right? It was Howie Kendrick as the dude. You know, it was Patrick Corbin taking down the big innings, you know, late in the postseason, because teams, they will pitch especially hard against the best players. They will pitch around them. Phillies wanted nothing to do.
Bob Melvin that, dude.
We'll get there. We'll get there. One of the worst managerial decisions I've ever seen. But, you know, you look at it like we pitched hard to Soto and Machado. You know, you look across the board, like Aaron Judge, terrible this postseason because teams aren't giving him anything to hit. So for Harper to do this, to work counts in his favor, to find his pitches, and then to deliver when he gets his pitches and just always step up in the moments, it doesn't really happen. In fact, it rarely happens. So for him to not just be playing well, but he's hitting 400, you know, hit nearly 500 in the NLCS MVP to step up in the biggest moment, in a moment where everybody knew he wanted to hit a home run. The pitcher knew it. The Padres manager knew it. Everybody knew it. And he still hit a home run. It's unheard of.
I'm not convinced that Bob Melvin knew what was going on, dude.
Yeah.
I honestly, like, the rationale that he gave of, like, one, we didn't want to push him past four outs, and two, he wasn't fully warmed up yet. Like, that's on you, man. Like, that's poor management, because your season was literally, like, it was an elimination game. Like, that was it. David, Hader threw one inning. That whole series, he threw one inning. Like, that's you look at Dominguez and Alvarado and how Rob pushed those guys compared to how Hader was used. Like, it's drastically different, and it's a big reason why the Phillies won that series 4-1. And to also circle back to how you're saying a lot of teams won't give they won't give your best hitter anything to hit. I agree, but I also think the Phillies lineup, the depth in it now, has kind of shown itself, and this is why they went over the tax. And if you look up and down, all nine regulars, and then you can even include Sosa and Matt Vierling, so that's 11. Everyone's had a moment. Everyone has had something that you can look at in the postseason and be like, remember when he did this, or yeah, remember when he did that. Whether it's Matt Vierling's double in San Diego, Sosa had the catch to close out the first round against St. Louis. And those are just two minor ones, you know, and I'm not going to go up and down the entire lineup, but like, everyone's had something. And I think it all comes back, David. I know we're sitting here and we're talking about Bryce Harper, and he's not the guy who signed Bryce Harper, but it comes back to Dave Dombrowski, and he's going to go down as possibly the greatest executive in baseball history. And, you know, it wasn't us. We were on board when the Phillies hired him, but there was a lot of backlash of how he ruins teams. And, you know, I really don't care, man. Like, he was the only guy with three separate organizations that he took to a World Series. It's now four. And the Phillies farm system has improved under him as well. So it kind of, like, just all culminates together. Like, it ties in the Harper, because, like you said, they're not going to give you much to hit. But, like, Dombrowski, the team that he built around Bryce Harper, this is why they're here.
Yeah, no, it's a fantastic point, and it was something I wanted to get to with Dombrowski. You know, and I was in, but I was skeptical.
Yeah, but you weren't out, though.
I was.
Like,
you
didn't take much convincing in the sense of, like, when I tried to sell it to you, it took 2 minutes. You were like, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. Kevin, it was better than having zero GM, which we had for a couple months.
Or a guy who just didn't want to win. It was clear as day that, like, okay, it might not work, but, like, Dombrowski's going to try to win.
Kevin, you know what I think it is? And I think this is where I almost kind of defend a lot of the people who got upset about Dombrowski. Baseball has overthought the hell out of the sport. People are trying to be way, way too smart when it comes to – and look, I'm pro analytics. I'm pro data.
When it comes to everything now. And I think, David, like, how the Phillies, with how they're leaning on their starting pitching, it's kind of like it's reverting back to how it used to be. Like, everything gets a return kind of thing.
I mean, Kevin, they were pitching their relievers, you know, what? Sir Anthony pushed 40 pitches the other day. sticks out and save. That is against
the whole time. The broadcast was critical of the Phillies while that was happening. Like the entire
whole game. Kevin, was it game three? The whole and writers after the game, they're talking about, oh well, the bullpen management. Who the F cares? They won the game. They won the game. It came back like it didn't matter because the next game it was a slop fest where the Phillies scored 10 runs. You didn't need your high leverage guys.
Yep.
And I think it's, you know, kind of talking about Rob, I think he's the perfect complement to Dave Dombrowski because Rob is out there to win. And he managed circles around Bob Melvin, despite Bob Melvin being, you know, the great esteemed manager. Nobody cares. Like
that's why he's Rob and he's Bob.
Exactly. Rob's just superior.
That's the difference right there.
But going back to Dombrowski, and I think it's more so a criticism of just like where baseball media and baseball journalism is at the moment, where people have spent too much time hyping up these smart front offices. And look, like no hard feelings towards these teams, but like Tampa Bay, Kevin, how many World Series has Tampa Bay won in the last couple of years? For as smart as they are, zero.
I think more to the Blake Snell incident than I do them winning the American League.
Exactly. You know, how many World Series has Cleveland won with their minuscule payroll and their crazy bullpen debt?
Milwaukee.
Yeah. How many have they won? You know, Miami, look, they made a real smart move bringing Kim in. Who, look, I hope she turns it around, but they won't.
It's worked out so far, man. Yeah, it's really worked.
Spend. They're getting worse, Kevin. They're getting worse. So, look, I mean, Boston bringing in Bloom post-Dombrowski. How many World Series have they won?
They stack,
you know, not that the Phillies have won the World Series yet, but they're there.
I liked your point too, David, how in defending Dombrowski on Twitter, you were like, Boston doesn't stink because of that. They stink because they don't want to pay anybody. Like they didn't pay Mookie Betts, man. And they're going to have the same thing happen with Rafael Devers and Xander Bogaerts. So, I mean, you're right on the money with that one. And they traded Betts for a bag of baseballs, essentially.
You know, most of the moves that Dombrowski has made that were really smart were the under-the-radar ones, picking up Garrett Stubbs, picking up Andrew Bilotti, picking up a Brandon Marsh.
Bilotti, I think, had the most appearances out of the Phillies this year in terms of pitching. I think he pitched the most games.
He was a camp invite, man. He was a camp invite. you know, bringing in a guy like Thor, who I think a lot of people thought was cooked. He's giving you big innings in the playoffs. And after that, he went to John Middleton, and he was like, hey, man, like, do you want to win? Middleton was like, sure. And he's like, all right, we're going to have to spend some money. We're going to have to spend some money on good players. And that's what they did. And that's why they're where they are. That's why they beat a lot of these maybe more at analytically savvy teams with the deepest bullpens in the world. At the end of the day, like the big-time stars, they're going to have the big-time moments in the playoffs. I think a team like Houston gets it. You look at how they've constructed their team. Now, granted,
they're very good.
They develop players is exceptional. Yeah. But at the end of the day, like you look at their team, you know, the Verlanders, the McCullers, the Altuves, the Bregmans, it's stars and stars and stars. They get it. I think Dombrowski gets it. Like, it's so funny to me. Probably in the last decade, the way baseball has shifted their perception of what a good front office looks like and what a bad front office looks like. When at the end of the day, the goal is to win. None of us are complaining about Dave Dombrowski. We all love him. We all want him to stay here forever at this point. Like that is the end goal.
Yeah, and even if he doesn't stay here forever, like just leaving his fingerprints on what they've done so far, I think is going to be beneficial for when he inevitably does step away. Because let's face it, what is he? He's in his late 60s, early 70s, right? He's an older guy, but I think his willingness to do things that make people uncomfortable in the sense of spending that extra, you know, a couple million dollars or, you know, I think a trade that you didn't touch on either, David, was the Brandon Marsh trade. I mean, or the Edmundo Sosa trade. I think both of those as well are like, I don't think 90% of the fan base liked either one of those moves. Now, granted, I like them both for what it's worth.
Well, and Kevin, like real quick on the Sosa trade, like that is peak anti- where the game has gone. He traded he traded a high velocity reliever, which is like the pinnacle of value in baseball these days, for a defensive sub. But it was a fantastic trade.
Yeah, and Sosa fits into what they're doing. And the Brandon Marsh deal, look, a lot of people were out on it, but like I looked at it like this, David. Like he's 24 years old and he was a top prospect last year. So like this was his first full season in the big leagues. And look, let's face it, he's playing where careers go to die. So to come in and be rejuvenated in an organization that's trying to win, whereas the Angels, let's face it, they've collecting a paycheck. I mean, Mike Trout is the face of that franchise. And honestly, we're not going to get too deep into it, but I think Mike Trout's legacy is going to be looked at not as great as people think it is. Great individual player. I don't know how good of a team player he is, David. And I think taking that mega deal with the Angels solidifies that that guy doesn't really care. He doesn't want to win. And then you look at a guy like Bryce Harper, who's the complete opposite, just to kind of circle back to the main topic here, who wants to win at all costs. And it was signified by he took no opt-outs in his contract. So just think about that. Like, guys are coming here from those other organizations where the mentality is we're going to go out and try to win this thing. And you know what, Dave? We've made it this far, man. Let's just win the whole thing at this point. Seriously, why not? And you look at the postseason, yeah, they were underdogs in each round. But if you look at the grand scheme of it, I knew they would beat St. Louis. I never doubted that. Atlanta was the series that was concerned me. But then when they got the Padres in the third round, I felt pretty good about that one as well. So, look, Houston's a really good team, man. They're probably the class of baseball. But why not, you know?
Kevin, we're four wins away, and Houston's got to face Nolan Wheeler four times.
Yeah, so,
you never know, man.
And Rob has shown, just to again circle back to Bob Melvin. Yeah, you know, we're not going to call him Rob because he hasn't earned it. And you have Rob Thompson, who has shown that he will push his guys and do whatever it takes to win. They're going to empty the clip in this series, Dave. They're absolutely Nolan Wheeler probably throw more pitches than they have been so far. They're going to push these guys. I would not be surprised if you get Wheeler or Nola out of the bullpen later in the series, even after they've made their two starts.
Yeah, I mean, we already saw it, like Ranger coming out of the bullpen to get those final two outs. Like, he's Rob, will do it. He will do what it takes.
I also think, you know, if it goes seven, don't be surprised if one of those guys pitches on 3 days rest or something as well. You know, like, I think that's kind of where we're at now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, man, I mean, just to kind of to wrap all of it up, like, I just – to get back to the topic of, I cannot believe that this has happened. It's happened very quickly. But it's certainly a 3 week span that I'll never forget.
Yeah. I mean, Kevin, I'm just happy, man. I'm just happy. Yeah. I'm smiling throughout the day. I'm watching Phillies highlights. We're 3 days away from game one. I will be in Houston for game two.
Yeah, I'm jealous. Yeah.
So if any fellow Texans are going to be there, shoot me a DM on Twitter. I'm already putting a little group together. We'll have some fun and make sure people know that Phillies are represented down in H-Town. Kevin, it was great to get back on the mic. It's been a couple months. We appreciate y'all for sticking with us. Obviously, we had to get back on with our team in the World Series. I mean, you know, come on.
I would like to, like we said, we got to get on later this week and preview the World Series. So we're back.
The Phils are most definitely back. Yeah, we'll be back in a couple of days to do a proper, kind of comparison between the Astros and the Phillies. But other than that, y'all, check us out on Twitter. Check us out on Facebook. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast. Our personal Twitters will also be down in the description below. We're the Bullpen Blues Podcast. We will talk to you in a couple of days.
Go Phils.